Hello and welcome to the Healthy Pregnancy Revolution. My name is Stephanie Wilson. I'm here today with Dr. Mark Sklar. For more than 19 years, the fertility expert Mark Sklar has been helping couples struggling to conceive and women and men regulating their hormones and reproductive health with his virtual fertility consultations, coaching, and fertility programs. In addition to his Doctor of Acupuncture and Oriental Medicine, Dr. Sklar has trained at the Harvard Medical School Mind-Body Medical Institute. He is the creator of Fertility TV, MarkSklar.com, and ReproductiveWellness.com, and the co-author of The Secret to Conception. The fertility expert lives in San Diego with his wife and two sons, where he has two clinics, but he also works with couples all over the world through his fertility online coaching. Hello, Dr. Mark. That is an impressive bio.
Thanks, Stephanie. It's so nice to be here, and I'm excited to have this conversation today.
Yes, I'm happy to have you. So we'll jump right in. What would you consider is the most important thing a woman can do before she conceives to prepare her body for a healthy pregnancy, a healthy baby, and a healthy postpartum?
Yeah, that's, you know, I love that question because I don't think we think about that often. You know, we often are thinking so here and now, right in this moment of time, like, oh, what do I have to do today? I'm ovulating. How am I going to get pregnant today? And we're not really looking down the road in terms of how our decisions today and impact having a healthy pregnancy and a healthy delivery and a healthy child. And I'll even take it even a step further and having health generations of healthy children, grandchildren, and so forth. And I think that's really an important piece for all of us to really understand and recognize. And, you know, culturally, generations ago, we did think in that way. We would think very much the impact of our decisions and so forth down the line in terms of how they not only impacted our family tree, but also, you know, the world that we live in. And we've kind of gotten away from that. And so I think that question is so important for all of us to understand how our decisions today impact the pregnancy that we want to have and the healthy child that we want to have. Because if I said, it's funny how we all, I'm going to make a generalization and group people into it saying that, okay, we find out we're pregnant and then we're like, oh, okay, now I've got to start eating healthy. Okay. Or we have a child and we're like, oh, no, I can't give them those things. I have to give them the best. Like I have to go buy the best food I can for them and so mm-hmm. forth. And I wish we made those decisions sooner, right? You know, if we were thinking exactly the way that question is leading us is to say, well, I want to have that healthy child and I want to start to impact their health, not just when they're around or when I'm pregnant, but now. And I think those same decisions. So if we just take a simple exercise for ourselves and pretend we already have that child or that we're already pregnant, I think our decisions, the decisions we make for ourselves would be very different. And I think that's a awesome way to start to think about how we're going to make some of those decisions for ourselves. Now, we're not always going to make those decisions, you know, when we're not pregnant, or we don't have our little one running around. But I think thinking that way will have a huge impact in some of those things. So the foundational things that I love to talk about, and they're foundational because without these, we don't have that foundational, you know, support to build everything on. Diet is at the top of that list. We have to eat the best quality food we can. We have to get away from as much packaged food as we can, fresh foods, whole foods, organic, all the things that I think hopefully many people have already heard and whether they've made those decisions or not. To do that, it's not like they don't understand that that's not the right decision, just for whatever reason, they haven't always chosen that, made that decision. So, as best as we can and wherever possible, that's really what I strive for. And I often think when someone's going to say to me that, you know, organic food is so expensive and eating better quality food is so expensive, it is, and I'm not discounting that, but I want you to think of those decisions, and you could think of almost all decisions in that same way as your part of your health insurance plan, right? Like your health insurance doesn't cover that, but we think it should, right? We think that our health insurance, and this is going on a little side tangent for a moment, but we think our health insurance should cover all of our medical needs. But we don't think that our car insurance should cover all of our car needs, right? We just think, if I get in a car accident, it's going to cover that and fine. But you change your tires regularly, right. You change your oil, you fill up with gas weekly or every other week, whatever it is, or you charge your car every day, whatever it is, right? Like you change the windshield wipers, the fluids, all those things. You do all of that. You don't ask your insurance to pay for it, right? So if we think of our medical insurance in the same way, where it's just for major things, and hopefully we don't have them because we're giving our car, our body, what it needs. So we're fueling it up with the right food. We're exercising the right way. We're getting enough sleep and rest. We're not on our phones crazy amount of times or screens. You know, we're not staying up late doing those things. We're getting out in nature. We're doing all the foundational things to take care of ourselves. That's the same thing as going to the gas station, putting new oil, changing your tires. Your car needs maintenance every 5,000 miles. So does your body. Go get a massage, go get acupuncture, whatever it is, right? Like if we look at it in that way, then I think we'll approach our health in a totally different fashion. And you're then building your body to last and sustain and create a beautiful, healthy child for the future. So the same thing, like we've got our I think now 11 or 12 year old car. And someone asked me if we were going to get rid of it. I'm like, that car is going to last because that's going to my kids. So every time I have to fill up, I fill up every time it needs oil change, every time it needs maintenance, I take care of it, right? Because I want it to last. And it's the same thing with our bodies. We know the decisions we make when they're not good ones. We know, but we still make them for whatever reason. And I'm not saying there's, you know, not reasons for it. But I think if we start to think of our bodies that we want it to last till we're 90 or 100, we want it to create a good house and a good home for the child that we're trying to create before they're born and beyond, then I think that has huge impacts because the health of your body and that environment of your body is actually what you're passing down in utero to that child. And so it's a combination of what was passed on when that sperm and egg met and created that embryo. And then the other piece is it's got to live for 9 to 10 months in the body. And what environment are we creating for that to thrive in, right? So if we make those decisions in that light, I think, you know, hopefully we start to make better choices for ourselves when it comes to diet, when it comes to sleep, which is a huge one that doesn't get discussed enough. Right. With exercise choices, with how we're going to manage our stress and so forth. That is the foundation of what we need for ourselves to have healthy bodies. And I believe strongly that if we have healthy bodies, we have healthy pregnancies, we create healthy children to thrive and grow in the future. And that's really what we're trying to do. And I don't want to minimize because your question was specifically, I think, worded about the woman, the female in this relationship. Mm-hmm. I don't want to minimize the man in this by any means. I just said a moment ago, you need that sperm and egg to meet and fertilize and create that embryo. 50% of that genetic makeup is coming from the man. So when the man doesn't, or the husband doesn't want to take responsibility for their environment, for their house, right, and what they're passing on genetically, I think that's a big problem. 40 to 50% of all fertility issues can be attributed to the male in some fashion. Miscarriages can be attributed to the male. We don't think of it that way, but they can and they are. And so I think, you know, for how much effort and energy women put into this process, I think their partners, their men in their lives who are part of this process really need to step up and take more responsibility for their role in that process as well.
I appreciate you pointing that out. Absolutely. Is there any way of eating that you believe is best? What about a vegan diet? Is it going to sustain the nutrition necessary, or should we get those organ meats in, or is it based on, how do you guide people?
Yeah. So I'm not, just because you mentioned vegan or vegetarian, I'm not a huge fan of those diets. I don't think they're meant to really sustain us, unfortunately. Mm-hmm. And, those cultures that did have a heavy vegetarian diet still typically also got their their meats and organ meats and so forth periodically when they had those available. Mm-hmm. Like they were heavy, heavy vegetarians seasonally. And mm-hmm. when they could get the meats, then they would. Now, I'm not here to, like, I'm not going to argue with anyone who says I'm a vegetarian for moral reasons and what ethical okay. reasons and whatnot. I'm not going to tell you that you need to change it. I'm just going to tell you that I think we've got an uphill battle and we've got a lot of work to do to get you the results that you're looking for with that sort of diet. And there's a lot of kind of substituting when it comes to those micronutrients that we're missing as a result. So my preference is generally a paleolithic diet as my foundational piece. Okay. I think that's a good place to start for most individuals, and then we alter. So I don't believe there's a one size fits all for anybody. Mm-hmm. And even though I'm saying paleo, that might be different for all of us. And if we take someone, let's just say from Japan, and someone from the United States or someone from South America, culturally our diets are different. And so we also have to take that into account as we modify a paleo diet to fit into that cultural diet as well and balance all those things out. Because genetically, if we come from that, that culture, that also is going to okay. influence how we need to eat. So part of that also, you alluded to it, mentioned to it. I love, I should say, I don't love eating organ meats, but I love the importance of organ meats and what they offer to us. So I do think that's a big piece. And we don't need a lot of it, by the way, for everyone listening. You just need a little bit. And if you are not a fan of consuming it in food like many people I talk to, then, you know, there are supplements you can add in that, you know, can take its place and relatively straightforward. But I do think those provide such important nutrients that are often hard to get. They can also substitute, if you do them right, that can actually substitute with a little other balancing out in like a supplement per se, substitute for your prenatal or multivitamin or something like that. You don't need both. You'll be doubling up unnecessarily potentially. Now, some of us, because of our constitution, might need a little bit more, and that's where kind of the individualization comes in. But if I had to pick one diet for all of us to follow and kind of offshoot off of, that's kind of where I would start.
Paleo. I love it. We can do that. So oftentimes women go in and they get tested for, are they deficient in D? Are they deficient in minerals? Do you think that it's important that the men are getting tested as well and making sure prior to conception that they have certain levels of minerals and nutrients?
Absolutely. We don't often see it, unfortunately, and men are the ones that usually either have to be dragged or pushed in. And they don't think typically, right? We're being stereotypical here, but they don't think that something's wrong unless, you know, I can't move, right? You know, it's a big problem. Now, I do think depending on where you live in the world, that stereotype is certainly going to be a little bit different. Mm-hmm. But in general, what I find the biggest issue with men kind of being proactive in this nature is really ego, more so. It's that machismo sort of thing that they, man, and you know, everything is great and we're going to pass on our genes. Nothing's wrong with me. I'm fine. And mm-hmm. you know, what we want to do is first and foremost, we want to confirm that everything's fine. So when we talk about testing, and you were talking about testing about some of those nutrients and so forth, which I do think is really important, I don't start with anything other than a semen analysis from it. And then from there, I break off. And so if that semen analysis looks ideal, and which is not always the same, my ideal is not always the same as the kind of clinical lab values that you'll see on a semen analysis. I like those typically to be higher. But if they're ideal, then I might not hem and haw too much about anything else. But if we're for sure below normal, then absolutely we need to do some more investigating and provide those micronutrients. We kind of get into that gray area where we've got to figure things out a little bit more. But anybody who's open to do testing it should go beyond just the hormone test. Like that's like the first layer, you know, the semen analysis, then a hormone test for men. And then beyond that, we want to make sure you are getting the proper micronutrients. I can't tell you how many men have never even had a cholesterol test done, right? So we want to do those initial labs to understand what's going on and provide you with what you need. And I think a good way for all of us to think of this is, you know, you might speak to someone and say, yeah, I feel fine, right? If we don't know what feeling better feels like, we think that the way we feel is the cream of the crop. Like that's as far as I go. So when I wake up in the morning and I feel this way, this is how I've always felt. So I'm good, right? But if we could make you feel better and you could realize like what your potential actually is for how you could feel and think and move, I think for most of us, we will then realize that like, oh, I was really only functioning at 50% or whatever it is. And now I feel so much better. We just don't know what we don't know. And if you don't know what it is to feel different and feel better and feel more, then you're always going to think that what you feel is the best you can feel. But for most of us, we can feel different and we can achieve more if we just open our mind to the potential that there's more to be achieved. And what do we need to understand to get there? And that's where that testing comes in.
That's huge. I love that you pointed that out. I'm going to need to quote that somewhere. That's a good one. So both as a man and as the fertility expert, would you have any advice to women on how we get our sweet, sweet husbands to come in and get tested for the things that you're suggesting?
So look, I think hopefully statistics and numbers really tell somebody something. So hopefully they can listen to me. It's not always coming from you. So I talk about this. I have plenty of information on this sort of topic that I think, you know, point them in my direction. So it's not coming from you.
I love that.
But it's coming from me. I have been in this field for almost 20 years, and I am just telling you 50% of the time, even if it's a miscarriage, is a male factor. So wouldn't you rather know now that it's not you and move on, or that it is you and you can do something about it, that you can feel empowered to make change? You'd rather not get a year, 2 years, 3 years down the road. You guys have been doing all this thing, spending tens of thousands of dollars on IVF. When all of a sudden you find out it's you, you could have done something about it. And maybe you didn't have to spend all that money. I mean, by the time you got to IVF, you would have had a semen analysis. So, but you know, my point is that like, why waste that time? Not to mention that it's like with the exception of like, you're not going to be poked and prodded for the most part. I mean, there are circumstances where that does need to happen. So I don't want to minimize that for men, but it's few and far between. And your partner, your wife, is the one who is typically the one, even if there's a male factor, by the way, is the one who typically has to go to all the appointments, who has to do all the evaluations, take all the medication. It's not you that has to go do that. So the little bit that you can do is find out if you are good or not. And if not, step up to the plate and make a difference and make changes and do something about it. And there's no other tests. And I've been saying this for years. So if someone finds another test that can do that, does this, you let me know. But there's no other test where you can orgasm at the same time of giving your sample. Like none. It doesn't exist. Like you actually get some sort of pleasure by giving your sample, and there's nothing else that your partner or wife is going to do that comes close to that. So, and not to mention, you've probably done that thousands of times on your own someplace. So why not just, right? So why not just put it into a cup and send it off to the lab? So, you know, don't make this about you and your ego. Make this about your partnership with your wife or partner and the future child that you want to have. So if you want a child and you want to have kids, let's make it happen. Step up to the plate and do your part, you know, and that's really all that we can ask of you. In addition, the other piece that I'll say is be there for your wife. support her when she needs it, support her when she's going through all the appointments. I can't tell you how often someone talks to me and does not have their partner or husband with them because it's not them. Now, if there's a schedule issue, fine. But listen, this is an important thing. You're trying to have children or more children and grow your family. I think this is a conversation for all of us, so we're on the same page. So you should be part of this process wherever it makes sense for you to be part of.
Ladies, do you hear that? Send all of your husbands over to Dr. Mark. Had his way. No, it was wonderfully said. I appreciate that. So let's get on the topic of detox. You talk a lot about detoxing our hormones, detoxing our bodies. What do we need to focus on detoxing before conceiving?
Yeah, so I think a good place for us to start here, and I meant to say this with one of our first questions that we that you asked, because you were talking about like, what could we do now and how does it impact having our, you know, pregnancy and our children? Well, this comes back to me to toxins. And oftentimes when we think of toxins, we think like we've walked into an environment and breathed something that's toxic and is going to impact our health negatively, which is accurate. Right. But we also do that by putting things on our skin. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as a point of note, in the United States, not in every country, but in the United States, we are exposed to over 80,000 chemicals in one single day by not doing anything other than your regular tasks on a daily basis. Wow. That's it. It's a huge amount of toxins that we are exposed to on a regular basis. So, can we eliminate all of them? No, the answer is absolutely 100% not. But can we minimize our exposure? 100% we can. And so, you know, I just had this conversation with my wife this morning when we planted some passion fruit vines on our fence that borders our neighbor. And she has gardeners that come, I guess, every 2 weeks or whatever it is. And I think once a month they spray. And today they were spraying. She saw them spraying. And she was like, what do we do? How do we tell them? Because she knows that doesn't happen on my property. We don't spray on our property. Yeah. So, but it happens on our neighbors. There's only so much that I can do. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, we do the best we can, but those are chemicals. So wherever you can control, on my property, we don't use anything like that. It's a bit of a hassle from time to time and you got to deal with it, but we don't use Roundup. Are you going to be able to eliminate your exposure to Roundup? No, but you can minimize. So that's also where like eating organic versus not eating organic. The same thing in our environment inside the house. What are we going to use? Well, if there's things going on around the house, maybe you've got some bugs or whatever, don't take out the bug spray. Use something that's natural. Like what else can you find? There's plenty with social media and the internet, like you could find plenty of recipes to get whatever you need and that will address it just fine. So, and then on your skin, right? Like all these toxins. So when we start talking about detoxification, one is we have to detoxify from first and foremost to set our baseline because we've been exposed to all these things. So that's part of it is we're exposed to all these chemicals in our environment. So we want to detoxify from that. The other part is not continuing to add. So we want to minimize that toxic burden that's being put into our body or that we're exposed to. So that way, the next time we have to detox, it's not as big of a deal, or maybe you don't have to do it as frequently. Mm-hmm. And then the other piece for women, or men for that matter, but I think more women in this situation, because I think of, you know, hormones. And if you've been on birth control, if you've been on hormones for stimulation, for fertility treatments, you need to detox. Those excess hormones don't always get eliminated properly, and they get stored in the fat cells in the body, and we need to extract them and get them out. Our liver and our kidneys, which are the two primary detoxification organs, and our bowels for that matter, but the liver and kidney primarily, need some support. They can't always do what they need to do. So we need to help them. And that's where a detox comes in. So I suggest usually once or twice a year, we do a detox. That does, part of that is cleaning up our diet. Hopefully you then, you know, maintain a relatively stable, good diet, that so that piece is not always as big of a deal. And then And then we're adding in some supplements to help the liver and the kidney do what they need to do and excrete what they need to excrete. And then if you've been through some hormone treatments, you know, with your doctors, then I do recommend taking a break from time to time and doing a detox as well to kind of reset some things and give your body some support.
Awesome. With the end in mind, what could a woman do before conception that would positively affect her experience postpartum?
I think coming back to what we've been talking about, which is really taking care of themselves. If you are as healthy as you can be, if you are as strong as you can be before you get pregnant, then it will make the pregnancy easier. It will make the delivery easier. It will make postpartum recovery easier. Now that's going to look differently for everybody, you know, because if you constitutionally have some hormonal issues or underlying health issues that you need to address, versus someone who doesn't per se, then that work that you need to do pre-conception is probably going to be longer and more laborsome, if you will, but it's well worth it. So I think the biggest thing that we can do is give ourselves some time in the beginning. I think the preconception work is so, so valuable for all of us. And often what happens is we don't give ourselves time. We're like, okay, we want to get pregnant now. And we just start trying. Or we say, we want to get pregnant in 6 months. So in 6 months, we'll deal with it. You know, but in my mind, first and foremost, if you know you already have some health issues, or you know you have some hormone issues, or you've been on birth control for a long time, now you want to be proactive preconception to get your body ready for when you're ready to get pregnant. But at the very least, you know, once you get engaged, if you know you want to get pregnant relatively quickly, or once you get married, if you know, like in a year's time, you want to get pregnant, get the support that you need then, to so that it's not as stressful when you want to get pregnant. I'm not saying that it won't take a little bit of time when you start trying, but that's not necessarily a bad thing. And that's relatively normal. But we want to be proactive in our preconception time, so that way the rest of that process is not as stressful and it's much easier. And not to mention, like we've been saying, it makes your pregnancy easier and healthier. You're creating a better environment for the baby, and it makes recovery postpartum that much easier as well. So yeah. I really want to stress that preconception. And some of that really comes down to getting the right support. So find someone who can help you. Find someone who can support you to understand what's going on for you, and create the plan that's unique for you that you need, not just anything that you're seeing on the internet.
What's the minimum amount of time do you think a woman should give her body to say, hey, I want to get pregnant in 3 months or 6 months, or what would be ideal?
So minimum is 3 months. I really think 6 months is a better option, because the eggs that you are ovulating this month were essentially chosen 3 months ago. Mm-hmm. So yes, that is the minimum amount of time, but everything had to be perfect, right on point, you know, at that 3 month mark for everything to fall in line. So I think giving yourself that window as well of just saying, I'm going to give myself 6 months before we start trying, and I'm going to do my prep work, I think that's a better number.
When a woman comes to you and she is ready, do you have any advice or guidance on home birth over hospitals?
I love home birth for the right person. It's what's been done up until modern medicine. So, don't think it's something strange. What we're doing now is what's strange, because we've always done home birth. But it's also not for everybody, I recognize, because you need to be comfortable with it. Because if you're stressed about having a home birth at home, I don't want to put that added burden onto somebody. You need to be in an environment that you're comfortable with. But I want to urge you to at least look at your options so that you understand the differences and what might be available to you, because the assumption is, oh, we just go to the hospital, deliver a child. And that's not, you know, necessarily true. I mean, I think maybe in the last 50, 60 years, that's true. But prior to that, midwives delivered babies at home. Like, that's what it was. So, you know, I do think it's a great option. We did not deliver at home, but we worked with a midwife and delivered in a birth center in a hospital, which was very similar to that. And then we also had that benefit that if there was an emergency, we didn't have to get in a car or be transported. We could just go down a flight, you know, one flight to the L&D, and we were ready to go. And so it all just depends on where your comfort level is. That's where my wife's comfort level was. And so that's what we did. But I really think we need to look at our options for all of that.
Mm-hmm. And I think it's something women should look at sooner than they think they need to. I think it gives them peace going into pregnancy, especially for first time moms, knowing mm-hmm. what is it going to look like for me? And it takes some of maybe the fear out of what labor and delivery may be like.
Yeah, look, we need to broaden our horizons and educate ourselves. If all you've been taught is that you deliver in a hospital, then yes, it's going to be foreign to be told that, oh, you can deliver at home or at a birth center. Mm-hmm. But it's all about education, so yes. It's and perspective. So we need to hear stories. We need to speak to people. We need to read. We need to be educated about what those options are mm-hmm. so that we can make the best decision for ourselves. And typically, you know, I think we will do that if we have the right information.
Is there anything additional that women considered? I think it's 35, right? Where they're
geriatric.
Geriatric. That's the word I'm looking for. Yeah. A geriatric pregnancy. Is there anything for those women that you advise they do additional or that can be done where it's not considered as, I don't want them to feel like it's as scary as I feel like the word geriatric sounds.
First of all, it just sounds awful. Especially when we think of geriatric, we're thinking of someone who's like 70 or 80 yeah. or whatever, you know, you're not thinking of someone who's 35. Look, that term is put onto women who are 35 and older because of statistics, only statistics. You don't have to fall into those statistics. And statistics doesn't mean everybody fell into that category, right? Like if most things are somewhat like a bell curve, there are some there and some on different sides of it, right? So I don't put much weight personally in that age. I think if we're talking about like 42 when it comes to conception, okay, maybe we can use that term there, even though I hate the word. But at 35, I don't want anyone who's listening, who's 35 to think, oh my God, I can't get pregnant just because I'm 35.
Yeah.
Your body is not a light switch. It's not like on my birthday, you're done. This is going to be a much harder experience. I want you all to recognize that your body doesn't recognize it in that way. Okay. It's not like all of a sudden, just because you hit your birthday, everything changed for you. And if you took care of your body, if you're providing it with what it needs, if you're giving it the support inside that it needs, that we've been talking about, then your age is just an age. And for me, it's more about your cellular age, so how well you're taking care of your body and how slowly your cells are aging versus, you know, how your birthday. And I think that that's really the important thing to think about. And if you want to think that your body is a light switch and your age is a light switch, it's more like a dimmer switch if it is. It was pushed down slowly. It can be pushed up slowly or quickly, depending on your actions and what you decide to do.
That's amazing. Is that kind of what you would say to someone who is coming to you that's 42? What would you say to that woman?
Yeah, I would say, as long as you're still menstruating and ovulating, I don't really care about your age. We just need one good egg, you know, to get pregnant. So your age is the only thing you can't change. The only thing you cannot change about yourself. Everything else you have the power to control and change. So let's focus on those things.
Absolutely. Is there anything else that you'd like to share with women today?
No, I think that we all have to remember that we have the power It sounds cliche, but we have the power to make change. We have the power to achieve what we want to achieve. We need the right support, the right guidance, the right direction, and the willpower to and patience to facilitate that on our end. And I think if you're able and willing to put in that time and effort, and get the right support, that you can achieve whatever it is that you're looking to achieve.
And if we can all readjust our minds to think about our health insurance like our car insurance.
Absolutely. Love that. Yeah. Yeah.
So you are sharing with everyone your free guide to empower your fertility. Could you tell us a little bit more about that?
Yeah, we get questions all the time about what I should be taking, what I should be using, which ovulation kit to track, you know, all these different questions. And so I created a guide that puts all of those things, all the things that I've looked at, that I vetted, that I trust, I've put it into this guide as a resource. So it's part educational to teach you about how to look at your body and what's important in understanding your body. And then the other piece is it's also part resourceful, because it's going to give you the resources that I think you can start to use and move forward with. And so whether it's supplements or, you know, an ovulation predictor kit or Castro pack or whatever it is, we've tried to put it in here into that guide for all of you.
That sounds like an amazing collection. So ladies, you can grab that right below. There'll be a link below the audio that you're listening to here. And thank you so much for joining me today, Dr. Mark Sklar.
Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.